and welcome back to the Not So Fit Couple podcast with your hosts, Lucy Davis.
I'm Benjamin Holden. So we have a very special guest on today's podcast. He is
very special.
In the top percentile of OnlyFans creators. And today we're going to be talking about his story, how he went from teacher to absolute sex pest. So welcome to Matt Does Fitness.
Thank you very much. Can we get a clap? Can you overlay some clap?
Yeah, we can overlay clapping. Those two don't really go hand in hand, do they? Teacher and whatever you just
you would think that you would think that, but actually it's surprisingly prevalent.
Really?
Big time. Big
as in like
time.
Being a teacher and also being on OnlyFans.
My best friend is a head teacher of a school and he makes like $6 million a year on OnlyFans.
Imagine horny teacher. Did you see that woman in the news though? Actually got sacked in America for she was a teacher and then she got caught on OnlyFans.
I feel like we should talk about getting videos that are demonetized. I feel like straight away, bad start. Although, but on the plus side, it's already done now, so we might as well just keep going, right?
Yeah.
We've laid it thick from the off, so why not?
Okay, I'm just going to order some pizza, guys, right? So carry on as you were.
Are you going to go for pizza?
Yes, because we've just expended a serious number of calories. I am in the biggest of calorie deficits. I'm like probably a day behind now, calories. Why is the 4G so bad in this studio?
I know, you might have to get Cal to do it for you.
And to be fair, Lucy and Matt have just done an FBI fitness test, which is why they're both bitching at the moment.
Yeah,
I'm fine, mate.
I did really well. I was so nervous this morning, and I sound a little bit illy.
To be fair, this will go up after your two videos, so you can technically...
Spoiler alert, yeah, okay.
Oh, yeah, let's not say what happened then.
No, this will go up after your
Okay, I won.
Lucy fell out... No, you didn't. Lucy won the milk contest. I won the real... Why is this not working? I won the real contest. The FBI. I'm actually in the FBI, though, so it's probably a bit of a disadvantage.
Well, you're not anymore if you've just aired that to everybody.
I am.
But you're not. If you're in the FBI, you can't tell...
I'm quite high up the bureau. I can do what I want.
You can't tell people you're in the FBI if you're in the FBI. I'm a chief...
Constable. Is that an FBI title? I don't think it is it? Chief Constable. It's a terrible title. That's like a very UK police.
Yeah, it is. We don't.
I just aggressively punched the microphone. Very UK-based police title, isn't it?
Yeah, constable. It is. Absolutely a constable.
And also, it's, I feel weird saying it because it's got
the C word, isn't it?
Yeah,
the C bomb.
Well, it's spelt constable, so maybe to say that sounds better.
Queen's English. We're gonna speak to you a little about how you progressed through your career at some point.
Sick.
And obviously, you started off, like we've been talking about, as a PE teacher.
Dude, yeah.
Have you got any funny stories when you're a PE teacher? You must have some fun when you were at school.
So like, from my school, I was very lucky, yeah, two reasons. Firstly, because the school were completely fine with me filming videos, which could have been, like, they could have been way worse, you know what I mean? Like, you're definitely not meant to be a YouTuber when you're a teacher at school.
But you can't even have people on Facebook.
You can't have people on Facebook. So, like, how did you?
Well, I went to so many safeguarding meetings, yeah. And the first thing, they'd be like, like someone would come in to like present, and the first slide was like, do not have any social media. Don't put your name on social media. And I'm literally just filmed the vlog like the previous night. Do you know what I mean? Like, literally couldn't be any more. But the school were really cool. The head was like a really cool guy. We got on really well. Like, so I was very lucky in that respect. To be fair, like at that point particularly, or even now, like my content's not, it's not like I'm doing mad stuff. It's just eating food and training and stuff, so it's not really controversial, but still I only would have taken one parent to just say something, then probably would have been in trouble. So I was lucky. But like my school, I had such a cool PE department. Like, all the other teachers were just absolute sickos. I think generally, not always, but generally PE teachers tend to be quite cool, I reckon. Or they're either weird or like really cool. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Like mine were all pretty cool. So like even when you had a terrible day, like it's still, but you just go and hang out in the office and it was like super fun. Funny stories, I don't know, like I feel like the stories would be funny if you knew, like, so I could be like, oh, I remember when this kid did this, but, like, it's not going to mean anything to you, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, because we don't know them.
Yes, it'd be funny in my head, and then that's it. I feel like it's not going to go.
What age group were the kids you were teaching? Were they, like, primary school or secondary?
No, like, secondary school, so what's that, like, from the age of 10 to, like, 18.
10 to 18.
And it was like it was in Folkestone, but, like, the catchment area was pretty rough, so, like, lots of the kids had horrible home life, so, like, loads of behavioural issues and, like, just loads of like really naughty kids, basically.
Do you think the PE helped them? Like, not sports, just PE,
like,
more
think
so sport.
I was fortunate teaching PE, not always, but generally, it's a bit of a stereotype, but generally, the kids that struggle like behaviourally and academically, a lot of them tend to be good at sport, or at least they like playing sport, so that you don't normally get it as bad. So you get the odd kid that's just, you know, really bad academically and is just really fat and hates sport, and that's the worst case. But generally, the kids that are naughty, a lot of them tend to thrive in sport, so then it wasn't so bad. You still, it's still hard. People say, oh, you know, PE is easy, but like taking 30 like 12-year-old naughty kids and giving them javelins like on a field, like that's pretty bad. Like when it's windy as well, like teaching, you know, it's still better. Like doing, you know, math, trying to, I used to watch some like science lessons, for example, and I felt so bad. Like trying to get some of those kids to sit through an hour-long science lesson when they have no interest in it is like commendable. But yeah, when you're outside and it's like rainy and windy and you're trying to control 30 kids, like it's pretty shit sometimes.
Yeah.
I was speaking about this last week, and obviously you would have been, you would have witnessed a lot of it in regards to fat kid culture. And when you, do you know when you're sometimes walking through Tesco or Asda and you see a full family together of people who, mum's overweight, dad's overweight, brothers and sisters are all overweight, and the kid who's like 4, 5, 6 is also overweight as well.
Yeah.
How, and obviously you've got a kid yourself as well.
Yeah.
How do you think your influence will impact, for example, Luca's upbringing as he goes through stuff as well? Because obviously that we will, especially with parents, imitate and look up to them as role models.
Yeah.
For those kids who are walking around with parents who are massively overweight,
yeah,
are going to look at, and they're going to have no other sort of person to say, or intervention to say that this isn't, it actually isn't right.
I think it's not yet, like, I feel like I've got to be careful because I think it's a bit of a controversial topic, and I think we're like, I think there's just so many, I think there's so many imbalances in the way that like health and weight is perceived. Like, for example, right, if you had a little 5-year-old kid, right, and they were dangerously underweight, yeah, you'd be at risk of them being taken away from you because they're malnourished, right? And yet you can have a kid that's horrendously overweight and it's fine. Like, oh, that's funny, little, you know, thingy fat kid, like, that's probably, should give him a bit less food. Like, how is that any different? It's not. If anything, the impact on their health and life expectancy is probably more drastic when they're that overweight. So I think like that, I don't think that's right, basically. And like you said, that's what you'd see all the time. Like, you'd see kids that were hugely overweight, and then their parents would come in, and they're also hugely overweight. And it's like, yeah, I personally find that unbelievably frustrating, because if you're overweight and you're aware of that, surely when you have a child, surely you're going to do everything you can to prevent them going down the same path. So for me, like, I get angry because it's like, how can you, I don't know. I have two kids. I would never, like, if Lucas started getting overweight and had, you know, too much fat, I would just give him a bit less food. It's pretty, or make him run a bit more. Like, it's pretty obvious. It's not, it doesn't take like a genius to do that. And if you're already in that position, if you already are, you know, overweight yourself, surely you would be even more aware of that, and you do more to stop that from happening. Like I said, it's not, I don't know. There obviously is some, you know, a lack of understanding maybe on nutrition and like, but it's pretty basic. If you're overweight, eat less food, like do a bit more activity, like, and you'll, it'll make a difference. So yeah, it's the same as academically. Like, obviously at school, the sad thing is that you can only do so much. Mm-hmm. You can, you know, some of the kids that were overweight, you know, I'd run extra little bits after school to help them out, and like we'd educate them on nutrition. But ultimately, when you're 10 years old, your parents are going to feed you. You can't, do you know what I mean? If they give you loads of shit, and you know, you're probably going to eat it because you're a kid. They let you eat loads of chocolate. Like, if I let Luca choose what he wanted, he'd eat loads of chocolate and stuff. But that's because he's a child. I control what he eats because I'm an adult and I know how that, I know what he should be eating. Do you know what I mean? So that's obviously a parent's job. And at school, you only see them for, you know, less than half of their life. So you're relying on their family to do the rest. And obviously a lot of the time it doesn't happen.
Did you get the opportunity as a teacher to bring parents in and, I don't know, discuss nutrition or talk to them? Like, I don't know if that's a thing now, or maybe it was when you were teaching.
Yeah, little bits. But what you tend to find is, like I said, you're kind of treading on eggshells, and like, I think what a lot of them will just be automatically very defensive. And it's the same just with people generally, not even looking at kids, just people generally. Someone that is over a lot of the time, or sometime, I don't know, they won't acknowledge that it's their issue. They won't say, oh yeah, do you know what, I eat too much, or yeah, I could maybe go for a run a bit more. They'll say, oh, I've got an issue with this, or I'm having, like, the people tend to not take ownership of that. So when it's their kids, that's exacerbated. They're even more defensive, and it's like, oh, I don't know why he's, you know, I don't know why he's big. He doesn't eat, you know, doesn't eat very much. But actually, when you analyse it, it's like he's playing Xbox 12 hours a day and eating just an absolute shit ton of rubbish, like, every evening. So it's hard because I feel like you're just kind of fighting a losing battle when you try and approach that.
Yeah.
Obviously, what we're not saying is that the obesity epidemic or crisis is due to bad parenting, but I think when you're looking at that young age where they really lack choice, there's got to be an element where parents take some responsibility with it. And the UK, we have the worst child obesity rates in all of Europe.
And that's really sad.
One in every five children in between age 10 and 11, I think it is obese.
Yeah.
One in every five.
I just think, like, I don't know.
20%.
Again, I think it's, like, maybe it's harsh, but that is child abuse. If you're, like, it's your responsibility as a parent to raise your child. Obviously, you know, when they get to the age of 16, 17, 18, that's it. You know, if they want to eat bad food, they're going to do it. But if you've raised them well and you've educated them and you've given them opportunities to do stuff and learn stuff, I feel like you've reduced the risk of them becoming unhealthy because they know what the repercussions are. And you've, you can, even just metabolism alone, you know, obviously you can condition to an extent, you know, you can set yourself up for life, you know, in a good way or in a bad way as a child, like, and again, that's the parent's responsibility. So if they haven't done that, like, yeah, I don't know, I find it very, I think it's mad, yeah, that, like, to own certain dogs, you have to have, like, a license, I think, right?
Do you?
You have to, like, go through, like, some kind of criteria to own certain animals,
like,
right?
An Alsatian.
Whatever it is. For certain animals, you have to, you can't, it's not any old person can just do that, right?
Mm.
But anyone can just go and have a child. Now, obviously, I'm not advocating some weird, like, Nazi society, right? But at the same time, it's, I don't know. Again, and I experienced it more being a teacher. Some of the parents at the school should not, they're not fit to have a kid. They're not very nice. People have done horrible things. Like, I don't know. Some of the stories I heard were horrendous. And, like, you obviously empathise hugely with the kid. But, like, their parents should not have been allowed to have a kid. Yeah. Because they're clearly, we're just going to, it's just a cycle of just doing horrible things to your children, them being older and doing the same thing. And, like, I don't know, it's mad.
It's like some people, when they get puppies for Christmas, though, they think the extra responsibility is going to help their life, and they have a child and they think this is going to fix a situation.
Yeah.
And it just,
It's hard because, you know what, some people do. Some people, like, maybe haven't had a very nice life or haven't done very nice things previously. They have a kid and they turn around and they become amazing parents. But, like, a lot of the time, like, I mean, the writing's on the wall, right? If you've done some horrible things in your life, then the chances are you're probably going to continue that because you're probably not a very nice person. So, I don't know. Again, obviously,
It's all relative. To, like, my sister, when she had a kid quite young, and it changed her because she became more responsible. Yeah. But I think for some people, it just makes a situation even worse.
Yeah. I, like I said, I think you obviously shouldn't underestimate the importance and, like, if you're going to have a child, like, that's amazing, but, like, you need to be aware that is obviously an enormous responsibility. Like, you're literally raising a human, like, you're sculpting them and you're setting them up for the rest of their lives. And if you're not in a position to do that, if you think for whatever reason you're not able to do that, then obviously don't do it. Don't just, like, rush into it, because it's,
I agree.
Yeah.
Massively.
One of the main reasons why we wanted to speak to you today, because I think a lot of our podcast listeners, a lot of the questions that we get are about, for example, what you've done from going from a career and doing something that you love doing now. And I did the same. Like, I used to be a police officer and then transitioned into the fitness industry. And a lot of our podcast listeners, a lot of questions we get about, how do I get out of a job that I'm not potentially enjoying doing? How do you make that transition? When do you know when it's right to move away from doing the 9-to-5 job and transition into what your passion is? And how do you kind of find that gauge, or how do you know in that period to bear in the boat and essentially learn to swim is? Because obviously you've done that very, very, very successfully.
Mm-hmm.
So talk us through your sort of journey from there and when you kind of made the decision to go, okay, do you know what, this for me now is the full-time career.
Yeah. So I think the first thing on that is that you've got to be prepared to work more than someone else. Like, obviously, if you're working a full-time job, and that isn't the thing you want, you know, if there's something else on the side that you want to become your job, you've got to be prepared to do a shit ton of hours, right? Because just physically speaking, if your job is 9-to-5, you've got to work after that, you know, and you've probably got to put in maybe as many hours in your other thing to grow that to a point where it's going to be a full-time job. So that's the first thing. It's not just going to happen. Obviously, it may do, but chances are it won't happen, like, overnight. It won't happen easily. You're going to have to put loads of time in to do that. Like, for me, so I was a teacher. I was doing, I made YouTube videos for probably 3 years, maybe, without making a penny from it. Like, I made, like, multiple videos a week for 3 years and didn't get anything in return. And, like,
didn't you actually have the monetization off as well?
Yeah, I think it's, for a while I didn't realise that was even a thing. Yeah, but I mean, at that point you're looking at, like, £5 a month or whatever. Like, I remember the first time I got paid from YouTube, and it literally was, like, £50, I think, for a month, and that was making, like, you know, three videos a week or whatever. And that's why I think the majority of YouTubers, or this is going to be applied to any profession, like, if you're trying to grow your own company, people give up because it's just shit. Like, I was literally filming myself in public multiple times a week and getting, like, 50 views or 100 views in a video, and it's very hard to justify that. Like, particularly, you know, after a while, like, we obviously had a son, like, got a full-time job, which I'm trying to also train as a powerlifter, so lots of other things. So, like, I had lots of opportunity to be like, do you know what, probably is a bit of a waste of my time. And, like, there were so many times where I thought, like, why am I doing this? Do you know what I mean? Like, I didn't realistically think it. Yeah, I for a long time, I thought, like, I thought it would be cool if it did become my job, but I didn't think it was a feasible thing. I didn't think it would get to a point where it was, like, a good enough salary that I could just do it as a job. But, like, maybe, like, partly because I'm quite stubborn, like, I was like, I've done it for this long, I might as well carry on going. And partly because, like, part of me was like, well, do you know what, I'm making, like, decent videos, maybe I should keep going because I'll get some traction or whatever. So there were lots of chances, lots of times where I thought, oh, this is a waste of time, but I just kind of kept going and eventually got some traction. It wasn't until, to be honest, I introduced, like, online coaching. So I was like, you know, people would pay me, I'd write a training program and keep in touch via email. And then, because at that point, after about 3 years, my YouTube revenue was probably, I don't know, maybe a couple of £100 a month, like, not anywhere near a significant salary. But I started online coaching and immediately got a good number of clients. And within about a week, that was then equivalent to my school salary. So I was like, well, hang on a minute, this is now a, you know, I was already looking for it, like, again, I didn't know if it was realistic, but I was looking for a chance to think, you know, mate, could I possibly, like, transition into doing this? And when that happened, when the income from that stuff was then on a level with my school, it was like, well, this is a bit of a no-brainer now. I think I went part-time at school. I went down to, like, 4 days a week. Again, they were really cool and they were really, like, understanding and, like, supportive. And so I went down to, like, 4 days a week, then, like, three, and then I think from 3 days a week. I worked for maybe 6 months part-time, and then at that point, within me starting to go part-time, coincidentally, that's when my YouTube just kind of blew up. And within, like, 6 months, it just changed enormously in terms of, like, revenue. So then it was just, like I said, it was just, there was no need for me to be at school. Like, I didn't dislike my job. It was quite a cool job, but, like, I enjoyed YouTube way more. And I was acutely aware, because there was lots of times when I couldn't do certain things. I'd miss events or couldn't film a video because I was at school. So, yeah, like, it was holding me back. So as soon as I stopped teaching, like, it was just so much better in terms of just that freedom, like, in terms of being able to do stuff, not worrying about making content that might be offensive because I'm working at a school. Like, it was, like, liberating. So that made a massive difference.
Did you have Luca at this point as well?
So, yeah. So so he's 5 now. So, yeah, I had Luca, like 3 years or so into YouTube. So I had a few years of just making videos. Then, I think the point I had it. When I had him, I was still working full-time at school, I think. But that was around the time when I started to, like, had a year or so, then YouTube started to take off.
I think that's one of the biggest things, and when we speak to people, is, and that's why it's great coming from your perspective. It's all good us saying to people, just quit your job and see how it goes. When you've got a family who are relying on your income, and you've got bills to pay, you've got a house.
Yeah.
Like, for when we did it,
it's a risk, isn't it?
I was living at my mum and dad's, I had the security and the safety there. You've got to make that decision, and it backfires.
Exactly.
You've got your whole fucking family.
Like, we had a mortgage, we had, obviously, Luca, we had a son. My wife, Sarah, was working at school as well, so we had, like, you know, between us, we had a reasonable salary, like, you know, an average, whatever, UK salary, but, like, nothing crazy at all. I think the only difference for me is that I was a qualified teacher. As a qualified teacher, you're probably going to get a job. Like, even if I had to take the hit and teach something that I didn't want to teach, you know, a non-PE subject, I probably could have, if it had gone, you know, like, balls up and it hadn't worked, I could have gone back into teaching. Like, maybe wouldn't have got the same, you know, set up at the same school, whatever, but I'm sure I could have found something. So that made a bit of a difference, because I had a little bit of a fallback, I guess. But I'm a pretty confident guy. And like I said, the point I left, it was at a point where it was already, it was pretty obvious. It was just growing in a very linear fashion, so it was pretty clear that, like, it was going to be fine, you know what I mean?
I think it's hard when you've got that bit of the start, though, especially probably those first 3 years where you were making content and getting fuck all back from it. Because a lot of people see you and see that iceberg theory. Of, they don't see that original work that you've had to put in to get there. They'll just see.
I mean, that's what's cool is that I've got all my old videos are still there. Like, a lot of people delete them. I've got, like, 1,500 videos. So you can go and watch my first, like, 300 videos.
But even in that itself, it's 1,500 videos.
Yeah.
That's fucking insane.
Yeah, that's insane.
It is mad. But my first you know, couple of years of videos was so bad. Like, it literally killed me watching them back. But, like, I think it's cool because, like, it's cool to look at that and think that person is going to go on and make loads of money and do all this stuff doing YouTube. That's pretty cool. Like, if I was back in the day, if I saw someone else, like, that had come, I'd find that inspiring to be like, oh, do you know what? Actually, maybe it is realistic that you can go and do that, because I think a lot of people, I don't know. I feel like human nature is like, oh, it's unrealistic. It's not going to happen. Like, it's a waste of time, whatever. But like, I feel like, obviously, you know, if your content's dog shit, then probably stop doing it. But like, if you're making good content, like, and you persevere and you're consistent, the chances are you will eventually get some traction.
What was that? So for those first 3 years, what was that content you were doing? Is it similar to what you do now?
No.
So was it not the kind of...
So like, started out, when I started YouTube, I was just doing it for a laugh. I didn't know what I was doing. I just made like videos. It was like instructional. So it was like beginner circuit training, like how to get bigger.
Oh, so like fitness, proper, like, very
terrible,
fitness.
Yeah, but terrible stuff. And that was the theme for a while, but then it kind of dawned on me that, like, you know, instructional videos are just, for me, just like, I find them very boring and very repetitive. There's only so many things, only so many muscle groups and exercises you can do. Like, yeah, I feel like it's a bit of a niche and it's a bit of a ceiling on that, you know? But yeah, that was my content for the first. And then, like, I got into powerlifting. So then for, I don't know how long, maybe a year, my videos were like, bench day one, squat day one, deadlift day one, bench day two. That I'd do like 5-6 videos a week, and that was my video. It was like me going to the gym and benching and putting a commentary over it. Like, it's just so bad. But I did that again. I did that for like a year, and the thing is, it's terrible. But like, some people like that. Some people like just following along with your training progression. I used to get so many requests to do, like, everyone would be like, I'll do like a full day of eating, and I was like, what is a full? What does that even mean? Like, a full day of eating, and then like, I looked into it, and it's just like, you just film what you eat for the day. And I started doing them, and they got like 10 times the views of my other videos. And I was like, well, let's fucking do more of these. Then that's how I got into like the. And at that time, that was back in the day when like, that's what fitness was. Every fitness channel would just do food videos. That was all the fitness content and food challenges. Like, that's when it was like really rife. So I still retain some of the training stuff, but yeah, we'll just start doing food videos. Then I think I did like a 10K challenge, and it like went viral, and then that was it. I just did about 4 million calorie challenges, basically.
Do you know what, that's interesting? Because obviously you've got your book out as well, which was that come out last year?
Yeah.
And one of the parts in that was about eating disorders, which we spoke about quite a lot. We spoke to Niall about it last week as well, and a lot of people who are in competitive sport seem to pick up some of those negative habits. You had it with swimming as
I
well,
hit
didn't
it with
you?
Swimming.
And
yeah.
The question I wanted to ask is how. Did you, because I think it's one of those things, eating disorders, it, for me personally, for a lot of people I've spoke to, it never always 100% comes away. It's always like kind of lingering thing that is sometimes, if you sit on the fence or stuff, it could potentially creep back in.
Yeah.
How did you manage that kind of content and doing those sort of videos with your previous from eating disorders? Because that's something that developed from when you were doing, was it triple jumping as well?
Yeah. I mean, so in terms of eating disorders, I think any sport or activity where you have to regulate your body weight, it's almost inevitable it's going to happen, right? Like, if you have to be that mindful about what you're consuming, the chances are it's going to become obsessive or it's going to become weird in some way, and you develop like an unhealthy relationship with food. But for me, like, the videos weren't too bad in that sense, because it wasn't like they're all one-offs, like in the sense that you do it for a day and that's it, you know what I mean? So it wasn't, and I could have not done them. I didn't have to do them. That wasn't the same in that sense. I was okay. It just definitely, because they got progressive. Like, obviously, did a 10K challenge, that did well. Did maybe one or two more. But then I had to ramp it up. So then it was like, right now it's going to be a 15K challenge, and then like 20. And then I did like a 25K challenge. And like the last couple of those like fucked me up. Like I think that the 25K just irreparably damaged my gag reflex, because that was years ago. And even now, like, it's a legacy of bulking lots as well. But you know, there's times when I'll eat like a lot of fat, and I'll be like, what? Just, do you know what I mean? Like, after that video, I had like do you know what I mean? Like, proper gagging. Like, after that 25K, I had about a year where I would sit down for a meal, and it was just like a normal sized meal, and I would just be properly gagging.
Really?
Not full at all, but just my body just rejecting like fat. But yeah, again, that's a legacy, I think, of bulking as well, just force feeding yourself over and over again. Like, I would think, oh, you know, the more you do it, maybe the better you get, and the more you but it's the opposite. I feel like the more you bulk, the harder it gets. It just becomes horrible. And like I said, you just develop a really unhealthy, I'll just dread meals. I'd wake up and be like, oh, I feel sick all the time, and just have to literally just force food down my throat. So the challenge is, yeah, I mean, they were horrendous, especially the last couple were absolutely horrendous, but like, they all served a purpose, and like, they were kind of, you know, fairly isolated, so like, it wasn't too bad. It just sucked at the time. But like I said, I mean, initially they were responsible for like an enormous amount of growth that I experienced. Like that's they were the first thing I did that kind of really blew me up. So mm-hmm. yeah, they served a purpose for sure.
Did you not ever feel pressure to keep doing those videos because of what?
Yeah,
of
yeah.
How?
That's true. Yeah, I mean. I guess self-imposed pressure because you don't have to grow, you don't have to do more if you don't want to. But like, it was pretty apparent that those videos would all go viral. Like, you know, they just got more, there's so many more views than everything else I did. Got me a huge amount of subscribers. And it's not even like more subscribers. That's literally money. It's revenue. Like, those videos alone made money. But the repercussion, you know, if a video, my 25k challenge, let's say it got me another 100,000 subscribers, you're talking about like thousands and thousands of pounds a year. It's a lot of money. That's my job. So like, yeah, like, I guess that is a lot of pressure because you think, well, hang on a minute, if I do another one of those, like, I remember 25k, I remember chatting to Sayers about it and we were like, that I can't even do that. Like, this is stupid. Like, this is a terrible idea. But it's like the temptation is so high because I knew it was going to get a lot of views. I knew it was going to get me a lot of subscribers. So it was like, just take the hit and do it. Do you know what I mean? But like, it's just the worst feeling, just having to eat that much food and on camera as well. I don't know, like,
could you ever, like, you can eat a lot of food,
but when you start filming, I know people that have, faked like challenges. I know people that have done 20k and done it over like 3 days and done it as
really?
A one day video. Yeah, it's pretty common.
Snide that, isn't it? Yeah. That's a bit
the
of
thing
a
thing. I think with some
not hard, it's not hard, like, you can fake that stuff pretty easily. If you I mean, you can see, you know, obviously, if you've time lapsed your eating, then like, it's pretty obvious you're eating the food, but like, in terms of, you could do it over multiple days, yeah.
I think like that situation for some people, depending on where they're up to, is so dangerous because for people, like I, when you watch people and, or I've seen people online, and I'm a pretty good guesser now because I've had an eating disorder before, where like you are literally in the midst of an eating disorder.
Yeah.
And you're also being fueled by that dopamine hit of getting double taps or likes and then monetization on top of that. It's like, you're fucking going down a rabbit hole.
Like, I kind of got out of it. Like, I haven't made a food challenge video for about 3 years. Like, I do food videos, but it's just eating random shit.
I don't think there's anything wrong with doing it. I think as well, if people are like giving some context to it as well. It's like WWE, just don't fucking try as at home. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
But I think it's like, I see some channels and like, they've got to a point where that is every video. So like, where I'm doing 20k challenge, they're doing that every video is like literally 10, 15, 20k challenge every single video. So once a week, they're eating like 15, 20,000 calories of just absolute shit. Like, I know you can condition yourself for it and you can obviously eat, you know, really well the rest of the time, but there's got to be some long-lasting repercussions of doing that.
Oh,
surely.
Absolutely.
That dude from America, does it look like the blonde hair? I can't remember what his name is.
Eric the Electric. I met him. He's an awesome guy. Like, he suffered from, like, eating disorder, like, anorexia. He had loads of issues in the past, right? And he said that he, what did he do? So when he was anorexic or whatever, like, you know, he was terrified of eating food, basically. And he used to go to, like, he said it was like a Chinese buffet and he would just eat the vegetables, but he'd be there for, like, 4 hours. He just developed an unbelievable capacity, just, you know, stomach, just to feel, just to eat so much food. But yeah, the guy, yeah, he I think he's done, I don't know, he's done something mad, like 40,000 in 48,000 maybe in 2 days, like just an incomprehensible amount of food. And he's like a small guy.
That
as well.
Would kill me.
But that's the thing most competitive eaters are like skinny little small people because there's no, you know, none of that, their organs, their stomach can just expand because there's no fat in the way. They'll drink a huge amount of water and stretch their stomach fast and then just go and absolutely plow through them at like a crazy amount of food. That's the thing, like I've done some of those, but like I'm by no stretch a competitive eater. Like my eating capacity now is pretty poor. I think as a result of those, I think it's kind of damaged like, if I try and eat loads in one sitting now, I really struggle. But there are some people I've met that could just have, capacity to eat is just like sickening.
Have you seen that woman that does them?
Aaliyah.
Hot dogs.
Yeah.
She doesn't even eat them. She just breathes and inhales.
That's going back to that gag reflex. That's a skill that I haven't got that. So if I'm eating loads of food, before I feel full, I'll feel sick. That's the first thing I get. I feel sick. She can just switch that off. Those guys can just literally pour food down their throat and they're just completely fine. Like, that is literally
she'd make a lot of money on OnlyFans as well.
Yeah.
Have you seen her? Remember we met her husband at that event?
She on OnlyFans? Sorry, what? No, I actually don't know what.
No, but I'm saying if she was on OnlyFans, she'd make fucking shitload of money.
Yeah, she would. But that's a sordid little niche, like
eating a whole sausage.
That like muck, but it makes me like, you know when you get like ASMR, like people just, there are channels, I've seen some channels, like I saw a girl and her content is like, each video is like 40 minutes of her just eating in silence. Just her eating, like, just
I have a phobia of that.
That noise makes me want to cut my ears off. Yeah, and every video is just that.
Wait, when I'm at home,
people watch it. It's got like a million views.
I can't eat anything at all. It's like I've got to sit and eat my dinner in the corner and just like.
Do you know? No, I have it worse with gulping. If someone
I know what you mean.
What are you doing? Just control it.
No, that eating sound.
That. What
if
Ben
someone's
just did there.
Eating, like the sound, the audio of someone eating makes me want
to
like.
It makes you want to just cripple up into a
makes
ball.
Makes me like angry, like a literally so horrible.
Do you know what's so crazy as well on the whole food thing? The one reason that I've never done a 10K challenge, it would do so well. Yeah. It would do so well. The one reason I haven't is because I don't think I couldn't deal with one, eating it, and two, the repercussions, because I did used to have quite a severe eating disorder for so long. And I had YouTube at the time. I remember everyone was like, do these challenges, like everyone's doing them.
Yeah.
I was like, I can't. I was like, if I start,
it's a slippery slope. It is, because it's just easy.
And I'm glad
like,
I never did
it. You film
did
yourself
it.
Eating food for a day, and people forget that it's money. It's not like, oh, you get some views, great. Like, that's literally money. Like, I did a Navy SEALs fitness test, right, which got like, I forget now, 18 mil views.
So well.
That's made just the video alone, like I forget, like I think like close to £40,000 just on ad revenue on one video. So like if you do a viral food challenge, it's lots of money. So it isn't just even just growth, it's like physical, there's a physical return. So the temptation is very high because it's like, hang on a minute, I can just do this for a day, film me eating some food and then someone's going to give me loads of money. Like, obviously going
to
do that.
Yeah, completely.
To be honest, now I don't think... I feel like it's almost, I feel like the train's gone. I feel like it's not a thing anymore. So I reckon now,
I agree.
If I did a 20K challenge, I don't think it would do very well. Like I think back in the day, like I said, going back 2-3 years, it was a guaranteed viral video, guaranteed.
Yeah.
And a lot of channels that built themselves essentially just on that, basically.
Yeah. There's a lot of channels as well that have built themselves up and you've been involved in quite a lot over the last couple of months in this whole natty or not claim that we've been speaking about before.
Yeah.
And the video that went up not too long ago was with Derek as well, wasn't it? Yeah. You obviously were chatting about getting the tests and stuff done. And there's like at the point, I mean, I've had the stuff thrown at me before as well, but not on the scale that you've probably had it. And we spoke quite a lot on this podcast about people who just like to shit on people's day or just like to point the finger and throw stuff at you. Because, I mean, straight off the back, some people, when they see people, for example, like yourself, it's like a mirror being held up to them and it makes them look at themselves internally and they'll get pissed off about it. And the one thing that makes them pissed off is probably you. So they're going to attack you about it. So they're sitting there from kind of their really shitty position.
It's just easier, right? Yeah. It's easier. Like if you're a lazy person, right, it's much easier if I think, oh, he looks better than me because he takes drugs, is it easier thing to say than, oh, maybe I could train harder or maybe I could like eat a bit better or maybe I could go to whatever it is. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's an easier, that makes you feel better about yourself because you think, oh, I could never do that because he's on drugs. That's why I look bad. So actually, you know, I'm doing all right. It's just because he's doing this. Like, it's a bit of like a cop out. You know what I mean? It's an easy way out, basically. I think that accounts for some of it. I think some of it as well. I think it's just a sad reflection on just like society and human nature. I think people like thrive on like, I guess, negativity. Like if you look at the news, like it's just dominated obviously by negative stories, right? Depressing negative stories that attracts like way more interest. So if someone made a video that said that, just saying, oh, these people are not on drugs, no one cares. Whereas if you make videos where you say these people are on drugs, it's like really exciting. You get loads of attention. It's a massive like genre now. There's a whole like audience of people that just love that content, eat that content up. Like, is this person on drugs or not?
It's called negativity bias, and as human beings, psychologically, we always are attuned to the negative shit that goes on all the time.
I do it as well. I think, I find myself doing it. Like, I don't know, like, it's mad. Like, you see, like, oh, Shark Attack. I'm like, oh, I want to watch that. What am I doing? Like, it's just bizarre, mate. But, like, that is definitely a human nature, like a trait for sure. I mean, I completely understand it. I'd like, you know, on the one hand, it's like the eating videos, you know. So looking at those, like Derek and also like Greg said, they're the main two. Those two are running the show in that genre, in that field. Like those videos do well. So just from a business standpoint, I understand they've got to. They're making a living off that. They make the videos. They make more money. Fair enough. Like I don't have a problem with that. I just feel like The issue I take issue when it's just lazy. Like, if you're going to accuse someone of taking drugs, at least do, you know, some serious research. Like, I would never accuse someone of doing something bad unless I knew either categorically it's the case, or at least I had, like, overwhelming evidence. Do you know what I mean? So sometimes, maybe not those guys, but I know, I've seen those videos in the past where it's like, the evidence is he's big and he's quite lean. That's it. That's the extent of their evidence. And I think you've got to be very careful, because for those guys, they've got to appreciate that if they say, oh, he's definitely on drugs, then their audience is going to believe that. And obviously they're in quite a powerful position, you know? So I think it shouldn't be taken lightly, but at the same time, I guess you could argue that, you know, it's just social media, like, who gives a fuck? Like, you know what I mean? If you put yourself on social media, I feel like you can't be sensitive. You've just got to take the hit, because you can't. I have so many sick things that have come from social media, so many amazing benefits and awesome experiences and, like, financial gain. I don't think I can then be like, oh, no, it's not fair that they're saying this. Like, just fucking suck it up. Do you know what I mean? It's just
do you think you ever get to the point where it's like, well, I'm getting all these accusations, shall I just blast the shit out of trend to be an absolute house,
mate? How many times I've thought that? Like, yeah, if this was going back 10 years, or if I was a single guy, yeah, I'd be, I don't know if I would, but I'd be very tempted just to do a year of just like the most optimal cycle, and then
I'm gonna top you up.
Dehydrated as well.
Yeah,
just do the most outrageous cycle, because like, you don't know. Some people don't respond right, but I'm pretty sure I'd be a fucking monster. I'd be the biggest man, the strongest man in the world, mate. So, like, part of me is tempted just to be like, hang on a minute, give me, like, 6 months. That's what I look like on steroids. Do you know what I mean? But again,
Carl was asking me this yesterday if he thought that I thought you'd taken stuff.
Yeah. I said, what do you say?
I think if you would have taken stuff in the past, I would have thought you would have done it whilst doing something like the triple jump for performance purposes. Because you would have had a lot more to gain from doing that.
Yeah.
Like, if you'd been any bigger or any leaner than you are now, wouldn't get anything from it in regards to monetary value.
Yeah.
Like, you wouldn't get anything from being like, maybe like in the gym, you're like, oh, I can lift a little bit more.
Yeah.
The diminishing returns, what you would put into it and get out of it, isn't actually that big. I think the other thing, Matt obviously wears very small tops as well, so that plays
look way bigger than I'm actually quite small. Yeah. I think that's a massive misconception. So two things. Firstly, like you said there, the athletics thing, some people will say, I think Greg might have said, oh, he used to be a high level athlete, so he definitely was on drugs then. Like, I think at my very best, I was ranked third in the UK as a triple jumper. My PB, was like 15 and a half metres. We're talking like three meters off the world. Like, I was nowhere near world class, not even close. Like, I didn't get any, you know, I got a bit of like, my club will pay for like travel and kit and stuff, but I was nowhere near elite athletics level, nowhere near. Like, I trained so hard and I wanted to be, but athletics is just genetics. You've got to be an absolute, you know, one in a billion. Like, I've got a very good genetics, but track and field, those guys are just next level. You're talking, like I said, Usain Bolt, you know, that's one person in a generation. It's just complete, you're a complete genetic freak. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, for triple jump, I wasn't good enough, basically. I tried hard, but I wasn't good enough. So the level I was at, you know, I'm talking like going to the track we're at today with like 20 people there. It's not the level. You don't take drugs at that level. If you're competing internationally, like, you know, I'm talking like going to the Olympics, and that would make more sense. But the level I was at, going from a 15 and a half metre triple jumper to a 16 and a half metre triple jumper, which, you know, putting a metre on my PB, which would have been absolute best case scenario on drugs, is still not even enough for me to go to the Olympics. So what, it would make no sense, you know, I was nowhere near at that level.
Yeah.
And then in terms of me now, like you said, it's another misconception in that the classic one, people say, oh, he can't admit to being on drugs because he'll lose his like Gymshark contract, or he'll, you know, he can't admit to doing it. Like, if I was on drugs, mate, you know how much content I'd get out of that? It would be the dream. That would be a reason to go on drugs. Like, I'd get so many videos and so much content out of it. It would be amazing. And in terms of my contracts, no one gives a shit. Like, I can do what I want. If I want to take drugs, I would do it. Like, no company or no scenario would stop me from doing that. It would be my decision. Do you know what I mean? But like you said, why? What am I going to gain? I'm not competing. I don't intend on competing. What am I going to get a bit bigger, get a bit leaner? But why? What, that doesn't help. My content isn't reliant on my physique. It doesn't matter. I don't really care that much.
With that, it's difficult with some people's contracts, because genuinely it does specify. Yeah. I had a contract with a company that I won't name, and it said you can't be an anabolic steroids in it. So if like, and I was looking around the company that I was with, and I was like, He definitely is. I know he
is. If you look at Gymshark, it's not a secret. People know some of the athletes are openly on drugs, so it's not a thing. There's no clause I can show you. There's no clause in the Gymshark contract that says you can't be on drugs. Like, I'm just putting that out there now. That's not a thing.
Yeah, I'm not.
Someone said before. I forget it was now. Someone said in a video, "Oh, I've seen." I think it might be someone that that Gymshark sacked them off, and they were quite bitter. And they said, "Oh,
I know it was
in the contract." Yeah. I said this. It's not true. That's not in a contract.
Yeah. No. For me, it was in one of mine, and that was quite an old one as well. Yeah. And I think for ones like that, it's they're the ones that are shitty as well, because you may have people who potentially open up and would talk about it quite openly, but they're literally being paid not to talk about it, like the same
category. Which is worse, right? Because that's where the issue lies. Like, if you want to take drugs, fill your boots. As long as you're doing it in a safe environment, then do what you want. It's like freedom of whatever, personal choice. But it's when you're... If you're taking drugs on the provider, if you're publishing the fact that you're not on drugs, then obviously that's hugely misleading. That's where the issue lies. So if you're telling someone to not admit to taking drugs, that's even worse, because they're giving the impression that they're not on drugs when they are. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's all, because then that's coming from we're looking at people and saying, well, you should be talking about it. I don't think anyone should have to. Like, everyone's entitled to do what they want to do.
Not at all. But you can't say you're natural. That goes without saying. If you're openly saying you're not on drugs when you are, that's of course.
Yeah. That's overstepping, and that's where people are misleading people, because then people are going, buy my program, which is whatever. And that's the part that's wrong. And those companies that are setting those structures in place for people to basically keep quiet and be on gear is pretty shitty. And I think that's where it's difficult to kind of, well, why should people then have to come out? Because they're literally getting paid. Some people are getting paid $5,000 a month just to never ever even talk about it. And that's where it becomes then fucking difficult. I spoke about before on the podcast, like, I did stuff, and depends what circle you're in. I did gear when I was like 18.
You really?
Yeah.
I didn't know.
Like, blast.
I'm leaving. I'm out. Yeah.
It was before he met me also, because I'm quite... Well, I grew up as an athlete where I got drug tested. So I'm super, like, against it.
It depends where you are. I went to this gym, like, old school shithole. Everyone was on stuff. Yeah. And people were literally saying, just give it a try. It wasn't like, Ben, don't try it. It was just like, here's a bag of fucking Haribo. Like, it's easy to pick up a bag of Haribo. So I did it. And I was, like, taking way too much. So I was, like, I was probably about... When I was 20,
so large.
I was like 16 stone, pretty lean as well, and like young. Yeah, mate, I was doing it. I was doing it for lads' holiday to go on Mallard.
Any photos of you in that condition? I'll be interested to see that.
Yeah, I'll try and find a photo of it.
It was about 11 years ago now, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a while ago. But I was just taking stuff because we're going on a lads' holiday as well. It was pathetic. So it wasn't. And that's what I mean. Like, when you try and apply that logic of, well, you'd think this person would do it and this person wouldn't. You've got kids who are just doing. I was literally like 19.
Yeah.
Doing stuff because you want to get better for lads' holiday. Yeah. You'll have people in, like, I'm fucking. At Google, working at big businesses, who were just doing a bit of gear to be better at triathlons or running stuff. So it's crazy that people are letting people go to, all the reasons why some people will do it.
It's mad, and that's one thing, like a disclaimer as such, because, like, I'll say, oh yeah, if you want to do it, fine, fill your boots. But, like, at the same time, I guess I would kind of discourage it, just in the, or not even just that, but, like, you better have been training for a lot. Like you said there, you'll get, you know, 17, 18 year olds that would just start taking drugs, like, without having come anywhere near their, you know, their, like, natural potential. Like, that for me is, like, mind-blowing. Like, I think people, again, society, it's just the everyone is so impatient. I'm impatient, but, like, at least give it a bit of a chance, like, even just out of interest, like, do you know what I mean? If you take drugs when you're 18, aren't you intrigued to see like what you could have done before that? At least give it, like, you know, 5-10 years. Train, like, really hard. If you've trained really hard, you've eaten relatively well, you've recovered fairly well, and then you think, do you know what, I would like to see what I can do, then fair enough. But if you've been in the gym for like 6 months or a year and you're jumping on gear, I think that's just, for me, that's like mad. I can't understand why you'd do that. It's just, again, it just reflects badly on society in terms of just impatient and needing to do stuff right now.
Sorry, it's a quick one. Do you ever get offended when people ask you, like, I get it a lot as a woman, and I'm thinking, well, I've been training since I was literally out the womb, and my genetics are very good. Like, I'm very aware that I'm a muscular woman. I've got a six-pack. But do you ever get quite, like, pissed off? Like, I don't care now, but I used to get so frustrated because I'm kind of like... It's like they're taking away the hard work.
Being accused of being on drugs,
being accused of, like, being on steroids.
Yeah, like, so I've had it loads for, like, you know, 5, 6, whatever, however many years, 7 years now. Like, like when I first had it, obviously I was a bit annoyed because I didn't know, I wasn't used to it. And obviously if you're not used to people just hurling that abuse at you, it's pretty like, whoa. But then I've got a pretty thick skin. I like, to be honest, for the last few years, like my overriding reaction is I find it quite funny. Like I find it, the thought that someone would go to the effort of like going on their computer or phone and actively writing a comment like on a video, I think that's, if I picture them in my head, it's quite funny. They're just in their sweaty room writing a comment, right? But for me, like, because people say, oh, you know, oh, you should see it as a compliment. Like, on the one hand, physically, of course, yeah, someone's saying, you look so good, you must be on drugs. That's a pretty sick compliment. However, like, if you look at the flip side of that, like, I've said this so many times, like, if I was on drugs now, yeah, I would, that makes me a complete psychopath. Do you know what I mean? I've weaved the biggest fucking web of lies and, like, scenarios and, do you know what I mean? For me to be on drugs and this whole time, adamantly say I'm not on drugs, that would make me an absolute like serial killer level psychopath. Do you know what I mean?
So
it's not a compliment. That's someone saying. Yeah. If you're saying, like, I get like, I don't really get it that bad. And like, to be honest, part of me is like, I just don't care. Like, just forget about it because it doesn't affect my everyday life. I don't get someone on the street come up to me and say, oh, I'm on steroids. Yeah. You know what I mean? So it's not an issue for me at all. However, on the odd Instagram post or the odd YouTube video, someone will comment, say that, you know, oh, why don't you come out and say what drugs you're on or whatever. And like, yeah, I don't know. I personally, like, for the longest time, I've just been like, oh, I don't care. Like, I literally don't care. I find it funny. Like, I'll show people for a laugh, right? But now I'm at the point where, do you know what? Like, I don't think you shouldn't be allowed to do, I don't know. Like, again, I would not accuse someone of doing something, a really, really negative, bad thing, unless I knew for sure they were doing it right, or I had some completely overwhelming evidence. So the fact that someone would do that off the back of literally nothing, I find it frustrating. So, yeah, I mean, like it's not happy, it's not locked in yet, so I don't want to talk about too much, but I'm about to do, like, a massive fucking mad thing that's going to just completely...
But I think that'll be great for you in content as well, anyway, just doing that was sick. We've actually got our own Natty or Not test as well.
What is that?
Carl's got a hand.
Just looks at you.
So if you beat me on this, it means that you're not that.
Do I get to play?
This is an exclusive. This
what
is
have you done?
This is our Not So Fickle podcast strength test.
Can I go first?
By the way, why have you even got this?
This is like the mass.
This is the creepiest little thing to have, mate. Why are you just sitting at home, just getting a really strong grip?
This means that it depends what your score is. You're like literally the ultimate master of masturbation. Yeah.
Okay.
Can I go first?
Carl's this set right?
It should be. Yeah.
I've just turned it on.
What's your best score?
We've not done it. This is exclusive. We've not done it before.
What's your best score?
I'll probably break it, so I'll wait until you've gone.
Okay.
It said put A25. Do I just squeeze it really hard?
If anyone's not watching on YouTube, Lucy's now doing the strength
test. Do I squeeze it really hard? How long for?
I think you just go like...
you've got to like, make a loud noise when you do it.
What did you get up to?
38.7?
Oh
my god, that really took it out of me.
Matt's next.
Why are you saving it to after I've gone?
We're actually no joke. We're getting a scoreboard from doing the podcast and it's going to be up there, so your name is going to be on there. So
have you got any contacts? Very... Has anyone gone?
No,
you're... I was the first, the second.
Okay.
Were you going right hand or left hand?
Really?
Right hand.
Right hand.
I might go both, you know.
Really?
Let's see which one's best. Yeah, okay.
Oh my goodness.
Okay, here we go.
Okay. Big one. Three.
You just turned it off.
I think I pushed it so so much.
You broke it.
That happens quite a lot.
So if Matt gets over 40 on this, it means he's not natural, basically.
Okay. No, well, I've got 37.
But you're not natural.
Ready, 3, 2, 1, go.
Oh my goodness, he's going to break it.
I think he's actually going to break it.
69.8.
Oh my god.
69.8. Gosh, you nearly...
Do you do anything at home apart from play the pink trombone?
You nearly doubled me.
I don't think that's that. I reckon you might be that. I don't think that's that.
I think, do you know what I said to Carl? Because you do a lot of deadlift, your grip's going to be really,
really... Your grip will be
really
insane.
Close this.
Yeah, but I feel like that's different to grip because you're having to... You're not just holding it.
Oh, no,
yeah,
that's a strength test.
That's proper grease.
If Matt beats me on this,
why are you holding it now?
Lucy greased that up big time.
Hold it up. Well, you did for the pull-up bar.
You hear my whole hand just click when I started doing that as well.
Are you ready?
This isn't being published.
I'm going again, by the way. I'm going again after this. If you beat, I'm going again.
69. That's
69. Oh,
that's a magic number, isn't
it? I feel like it's going to pop.
Let's go.
You just go.
Okay.
You're about to press start.
Come on, Big Ben. Let's go, mate.
Let's go.
Go on.
I want to see it. I can't see the screen.
Don't we cheating?
How is that cheating?
Put it on the floor.
Shall I do it again then?
but I'm going to get
No, right no, now. Do it again. You've got to do that again because...
Then I'll do it and then I'll go against him. I just got 76, but I did put it down, so I didn't think that counts.
That was cheating. You were pushing against the floor.
I wonder if my left's stronger, because my left hand is my overgrip in deadlift, which you would think would be stronger.
Yeah. Well,
I'm going to go again, left hand, pushing in, then I'm going to go right hand.
Okay.
Okay.
You can't push into the floor.
It's the new rule. You can do whatever the fuck you want.
No, I didn't. I mean, I'm not really involved in this, am I? I'm a bit out of the...
Okay.
This is a non-masturbation hand.
I want to get 100. I want to get three figures here.
You'll break the machine. Maybe you should go next in case it breaks. Oh, goodness.
There we go.
Gosh. Oh, my.
What did you get?
76.2.
Oh, that's only
7.4. Oh, my God.
Don't. You can't just keep going.
That was left hand, okay. Yeah.
This is
okay, this is the last go.
I don't know if my left's better or not. It might not be.
Well, I'm at the bottom of the scoreboard.
I want more than that.
I think.
I want to get 80 at least.
Oh, you've just broke it. What have you done?
I broke it.
Press on and off.
It's cheap shit.
Hold it down.
So
you might have to do it after because this is just wasting time.
I think I probably would have beat you anyway.
No, you wouldn't have, mate. There you go. You said max. It came up and said max, yeah.
There you go.
It said please don't do any harder because you'll break it.
So this is your last go on air and then you can do it after.
On mine,
podcast.
It said one hand at a time when I did it. Yeah.
Pull.
Oh, fuck, you hit my finger. Oh, my God, I dislocated my fucking
36,
hand.
I beat Ben.
That's all I go.
Just use that.
I beat Ben.
If you beat, I'm going again. This will be going for a while.
Go on. One more. Oh, goodness.
Oh, I was weak.
63. Yeah. Now we're going to pause this game.
But what's going to happen is you'll do it again with someone else and they'll beat you and then I need to come back and do it again.
There you go.
That's the other thing. Like, it's difficult sometimes. Like, I don't speak about it often, but when I have spoken about it, as soon as I've gone, like when I was whatever, I took stuff. Oh, well, now whatever you do doesn't count. You're cheap because you've done it. It's not like it lasts for fucking ever, mate. Yeah, it's not in your system forever. Yeah. Obviously, I will always have some kind of advantage from that period of time where I've grown. That's the whole topic of discussion when we're looking at transgender athletes and stuff as well. There's always going to be that advantage just come through that period.
I think more so in for example, let's go back to the triple jump, right? If you took loads of drugs and it allowed you to jump a meter further, if you stopped taking drugs, you've still experienced what it feels like to do that, and that's like you can't inherit that skill in any other ways. So that's a massive advantage. Knowing your body knows how that feels, and then you can probably replicate it. I don't know, more the chance of doing it is higher. That's one thing, right? If you know, like a squat, if you can put 50k on your squat, and then you go back to not doing that, you've still felt that, you've still had that on your back, you've still got that experience, which is a valuable thing, right? Which obviously is still there. But yeah, it's kind of irrelevant, I guess.
Yeah, that mind-muscle connection.
Yeah.
And I mean, it'd be interesting when you start doing the other bits, as people will see on YouTube. But as we were explaining, then it's mad the lengths that some people will go to. Like, we've been talking about the video, and I get called up on screen on YouTube, of where the guy was in his hotel room just before the Olympics, literally blood doping. And the police kicked the door down. He had to sit there for another 40 minutes just with
minutes of all
Is that how long it takes? Why is it in your arm for 40 minutes?
Was it blood? Doping, so he had to take it out and then put a transfusion in. And he had to finish off the transfusion whilst the police were sitting there.
Would you chat to them? Would you just be like, so I'm obviously not competing this
tomorrow,
year.
I'm not competing tomorrow.
Did he just try to cover up? Do you think he just made like a jump over it or something?
Yeah.
Desperately tried to, what?
Do you want to hear the best drug test that I know about? So when we were swimmers, we actually did used to get drug tested, like full on after you race, stripped down. And we had this like 100% me thing where you had to log what you were taking. So there's a certain type of Sudafed that I wasn't allowed to take because it had something in a Lemsip. But basically this guy had got drug tested. This must have been a while back though, because it's obviously advanced since then. And he managed to have like a pipe with like a wee bag somewhere that he was holding, and then it went like behind his willy and he weed into this pot and nobody noticed because you're stark naked. Yeah. When it came back, it was pregnant because he'd used his wife's wee.
I think I've heard a similar
version. So heavy that, isn't it?
Yeah.
You're like, congratulations.
If you're going to do that, at least find a man. Like, come on. Like,
oh my God,
going
find
to the extent of getting a tube of urine, at least find a male's urine that you know is going to be okay. Like, that's mad.
Yeah, and who you can trust.
Yeah, because surely there must be other markers other than pregnancy that it's not a male. Yeah. I don't know. Do you know what I mean? That's
like,
lazy.
Like your hormone levels or something. Yeah, but that is just it's a bad situation to be in, isn't it?
That's pretty. I mean, when you're doing that, then it's kind of commendable. It's like you...
You went through all
effort.
That.
Yeah,
going
all
out.
Still, it's pretty weird.
That was, I mean, when I was working for the police as well, I got accused of it then. I was like, I'm obviously not going to be fucking doing it while I'm sitting in the police. But there's obviously some people that do it, and people got kicked out whilst I was in the police for taking gear.
That's what like, when one of my, I even remember my first powerlifting comp, my first or second powerlifting comp, I came second. The guy that won then failed a drugs test, like, after the comp. But, like, that's in the IPF, yeah? There are so many federations where you don't get tested. Like, if you're on drugs, what are you doing? Just don't compete in a tested fed. Yeah. Like, you, first, it's just stupid. But secondly, like, have, I don't know, like, a bit of respect. I don't know. Like, if you're taking drugs, fine, but just compete in a fed where the other guys are as well. Why are you trying to sneak into an IPF?
Is that only in powerlifting? You don't have that with swimming. It's either an athletic side, you're doing it or you're not.
Powerlifting's weird. Like, it's why it's not the Olympics. It's just a mess. There's about 20 different federations. So, like, some of them drugs test, some of them don't. But even the ones that do drugs test, like, I've been tested, but that was when I won. They only test the winner because it's obviously expensive for them to do it. They can't afford to do it. So it's a little bit meaningless, to be honest. But still, if you are on drugs, just don't compete in a tested fed. It's just taking the piss off.
That happened with the previous Olympics. So the guy who just won the 100 metres this year, the Italian guy, when they did the whole pool of testing, they did it prior to the Olympics, and he didn't get tested because his scores and numbers were so low, they didn't even think he was going to qualify, and they ended up winning.
That's mad.
And he was the only one who wasn't, one of the ones who wasn't tested, and his coach was a bodybuilding coach as well. Coaching people on gear, so it was like, duh. So it was pretty obvious. But
has that been found out, though, that he was taking things?
Yeah, it's all kicked off.
So he's going to get his medal strip, potentially.
Pretty much, yeah. The thing that...
God, yeah.
You did some of the powerlifting meets as well. How the fuck does that... How did you lend yourself to powerlifting when... Because you stopped triple jumping. Was it due to a stress fracture of the spine?
Yeah.
How the fuck does that lend itself to deadlifting heavy shit off the floor?
So it's like... It does seem a bit weird, but at the same time, so triple jump is like, if you're looking to do a sport, if you're like, oh, I want to fuck my back up, triple jump is the one. Like, it's just I've read studies on it, and it's like, when you land the hop phase, it's like, I don't know, 12 times your body weight that's coming through your hip and your ankle, and, like, it's just unbelievable, because you're essentially, you watch a long jump, you run as fast as you can, you jump as far as you can, but then rather than landing like on your ass in the sandpit, you land on one foot on a hard surface. Like, it's a ridiculous amount of impact, so your back just gets absolutely mashed. And because it's obviously unilateral, it's such an, you only got so many times I'd just land awkwardly and my back would be in spasm for like the rest of the day. So, like, it's a horrendous amount of impact. It's just, in hindsight, it's just a mad thing to do. It's just such a weird event. I don't know why I even started doing that. But yeah, so I just, my back was just mashed. I had like a bit of time where like I couldn't even stand up straight. It was just horrendous. Then like it started feeling okay. I started going to the gym and just doing upper body stuff. I started doing like squats and deadlifts, just like body weight and then like with a bar, just as like, conditioning, like strengthening, rehab stuff. But like the thing with a deadlift and a squat is, particularly a sumo deadlift, like, it's heavy and outwardly it seems like it's a lot of impact, but like it's not, it's controlled. You're doing the exact same thing over and over again. And if your technique is good and you build it up slowly, the risk is almost non-existent, because it's not like rugby. You know, rugby, you can be conditioned, but if someone just fucking plows into your knee, you can't account for that. Squat and deadlift, you do that. You know, I've squatted about 50 million times in my life. What is going to go wrong? I'm doing the same thing every single time. Like, if I get stuck, someone takes it or I dump it. I mean, obviously, ideally, you don't squat to a level where you might dump it. So the risk is so non-existent, and the pressure on your back. Like I said, when I first started, I was conventional deadlifting, and that would I could feel my back where the stress fracture was, and it was like it would stop me lifting because it hurt. When I switched to sumo deadlift, like with a neutral spine, it didn't touch it at all. Like, at times I was deadlifting heavy 3 times a week and it was completely fine. Like, it's a different kind of impact. The impact that caused the injury for me was the impact, hitting the ground. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's different to loading. Like, that's a way more controlled thing. And because I built it up so slowly over such a long period of time, I guess it just got stronger at the time. And by the time I got to heavy loads, I'd done the movement so many times. It was so ingrained in me, and my technique was decent. It's like my squat form, even though I squat low bar, it's almost a high bar position. My back's very upright. My deadlift, sumo, same thing. So my lower back never really gets, any kind of stress. So it's never been an issue. My back's the best it's ever been. But when I was a triple jumper, if I couldn't stand up for more than like 5 minutes, my back would just go into spasm all the time. Whereas now my back feels like the best it ever has. It feels really good, which is nice.
Did you get a scan at the time?
Yeah, so I had a guy who, like, a physio chiropractor who I'd see every, like, 2 or 3 weeks, and it was pretty clear that's what it was. We went got a scan, obviously, just to make sure, but it was kind of, it was nothing else it could be, you know. It was like, my back would hurt, and every time I'd do, like, a plyometric session or a jump session, it would like, I'd be in spasm for the rest of the day. I couldn't stand up straight. It would be like, you know, when your back just goes, like, my erectors would just go solid, and I literally would just be stuck in a weird, bent over like an old man for, like, hours afterwards. And it just got worse. It would be like, you know, first time it happened, 10 minutes, then it was, like, an hour. Then by, you know, but after 6 months, it was like I'd spend the rest of the day on a sofa because I couldn't stand up straight. And yeah, I think I just had a session where it just, like, just landed a hop in, like, an awkward angle, and just, like, yeah, just absolutely slammed it. And that was, I guess, just like the icing on the cake, and I was just fucked after that for a
Did you find it difficult to... Because I suppose for how long that's, like, your identity, isn't your, fucking life?
Like, almost 10, well, pretty much 10 years. I did, like, the first few years it was just at school and it was at uni, but then, you know, for the last 7 years or so, I considered myself a triple jumper. That was my profession. Like I said, I never got to, like, a world-class level, but I did it full-time. You know, I had a couple of years where I stopped working so I could focus on it. Like, funding in athletics is so bad. So, like, I had mates that won, like, world medals and weren't getting funded. Like, it's crazy, the discrepancy between certain sports. But, yeah, I wanted, you know, that was what I did for that long. So, yeah, that's why I got into YouTube, because I stopped athletics and I just had, like, this massive gaping hole in my life. Like, what am I doing now? Like, felt a bit aimless. So that was kind of that, filled that void, basically.
I didn't know that, right? That's quite interesting. It was the same as me. Like, my identity was a swimmer.
Yeah.
Hi, I'm, like, Lucy. Like, I'm a swimmer. Yeah. Like, that's all I was. And I went straight into fitness, but I didn't actually clock on. Look at that, it coming.
Have you ever, this happens a lot in, I think, from what I've heard, it happens a lot in athletics. I'm wondering if you had much of it. Because we spoke about it quite a lot as you progress through your career. And the reason why I said that happens in athletics is because I spoke to Harry about it with some people who become quite salty because although he isn't the best performer, he now makes decent money from sponsors because he's a bit of a personality, he's a character. People buy into him. Have you had it much where you've, as you've progressed through your career and as you progress to currently where you are now, you've distanced yourself from certain people, or you found yourself moving into a different social circle, or you've had to move away from some salty people who have just left comments because they've become bitter seeing you progress and them stay pretty stagnant?
Not really. To be honest, like, when I was doing athletics, like, I'd be on Facebook, I wasn't even on social media, like, it wasn't really a thing. So, like, and I think I didn't, you know, I know what you mean, but, like, when I started social media, I'd stopped athletics, so, like, I wasn't doing it as a triple jumper gym. I know what you mean. There are obviously some athletes who, maybe they're making money through other avenues as a result of social media, and so they're not the best sprinter, but because they're doing more shit, they're making more money, right? I mean, that's, like, good on them. Do you know what I mean? That's, I say, any sport. Like, you look at football, like, you know, you might have two footballers that are, one's a better player, but the other guy's whatever. He's got a bigger social media and is making more money because they can command a bigger fee. So that's, like, part of it. That's part of the skill, right? Is the ability to market yourself. Same with social media. You know, you can have two people that have a million followers. One can be making 10 times the amount of the other because they're better at maximizing, capitalizing on that following. So, like,
yeah, mate, I know some people have, like, millions of followers and then fuck all money, and some people have, like, a couple of thousand. Shit ton of money. So it doesn't always. What I more mean is, like, even past your sporting career, as you moved away, even from maybe that period of PE teacher to where you are now, do you find that your social circle or your friend, I mean, naturally will begin to change. But
I don't think so. I mean, I've not really encountered really anyone that's, like, you know, salty as such. Maybe some people can be, like, quite dismissive. Like, not so much now because it's evident that, like, I'm doing all right, you know. But back in the day when I was, like, not doing so well, it wasn't so apparent that I was making money from it. People would almost it's like kind of laugh at it and, like, be dismissive in the sense of, like, that isn't a real job. Like, what are you doing? Why don't you go and get a real job? But, like, I think, to be honest, for me now, it's, like, overwhelmingly positive. Like, people that, you know, most people are really cool about it and they're, like, really happy for me and, like, I think I'd be the same. Like, I think it's cool if you know someone that's done really well, that's a celebrity or is in a really cool position, and you knew them before that, it's pretty cool, wouldn't it? Being like, I knew you when you just did nothing. Like, I think it's, like, I find that inspiring, that if someone has done that, gone from nothing to being in a really good position, it's cool. I feel like it gives you, you know, hope that you could do the same thing, like, you can emulate that. But no, I don't think I've really encountered any, like, negativity in that sense, really, I don't think.
Yeah, I think we were having this conversation at dinner yesterday, and, like, for the industry that you're in, 99.9% of people would change positions with you like that based on the success and stuff that you've had. And some people will appreciate that, but then some people will throw stones at it because that's their way of dealing with it. And a lot of people do it, for example, when we're looking at personal training with Joe Wicks. Loads of people hate on Joe Wicks because he's uber successful. And people just use that as a coping mechanism. I guess that's kind of difficult. But
Yeah, it's like jealousy. Again, it's the same. It goes similar to the drugs thing, right? It's just like it makes you feel better about yourself. Mm-hmm. If someone's doing really well and you're in it and you're not, obviously that emphasises the fact that you're not doing well. So it's easier for you to bitch about them or slag mm-hmm. them off or say something bad, because that it detracts from the fact that you're maybe not doing as well as you want to be. Like anyone, right? Anyone that is critical or negative about someone else, that's a reflection on themselves. You know what I mean, I would never like, I don't know, go all out bitching about someone, you know, oh, this person's such a, I hate their stuff, like, what, I haven't got time, like, I don't care, like, what,
yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I literally don't care, like, I think you've got to have probably issues, you know, your own issues to that's kind of, you're broadcasting that, I guess, mm-hmm. you know, for you to go and do that, because that's, where else would that come from? Do you know what I mean? If someone is horrible to someone else, they're probably not having a very good time, like, yeah, that's one of the things I'll say as well. You know, going back to not just the drug accusation, but just general negativity. Like, I would feel sorry for that person. If someone is having such a shit time that they get off on, like, writing negative comments, like, I feel a bit sorry for that person. Mm-hmm. It's a bit of a weird existence. I mean, they're obviously not having a very nice life, because if you were having a nice life and you were doing well, you wouldn't waste your time doing that, would you? Do you know what I mean? So it's more a reflection on them than it is on you, I'd say.
Yeah. It's a difficult situation to be in, because, like we said before, like, you'd have to be a fucking sociopath not to hear or see those opinions that go in that are negative. But it's, I suppose, it's where you give your energy or whose are those opinions that you value that starts to become important.
Yeah. Exactly that. Like, you know, if I'm walking outside and a tree branch hits me, I'm not going to get annoyed at the tree, because it's a fucking tree. Like, it's not, you know what I mean? It doesn't know what it's doing. Like, if someone is, like, a lot of the negative comments, the people writing those comments are either A, a complete moron, or B, a 12-year-old kid that's sitting in their mum's basement. Like, I don't value either of those person's opinion, so I'm not going to take that on board. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
You'd never take advice off them.
Like, if I go and critique someone's, if someone is a snooker player, right, and I go and critique them, they probably don't give a fuck, because I have no idea what I'm talking about. So they shouldn't value my opinion, because it's meaningless. Do you know what I mean? So it's the same thing. Like, if someone's commenting that isn't in a position to, their opinion means nothing, then don't worry about it. Like you said, if it's someone that you do value their opinion, or it's someone that knows you or whatever, then that's different, and you probably should take that on board. But you've got to, you know, learn to distinguish, because otherwise you're just going to go mad if you take everything on board of that, because there's obviously going to be some of it out there.
It's a difficult headspace to get. Like, even if you don't know right now, the headspace that you're in is so fucking difficult to get to. And, for example, we had someone who's similar again. We had James Smith on a few weeks ago, and he's that same kind of person where he's got to that point now where he's like, I don't give a fuck about the people.
You literally would die. You couldn't do it. You physically couldn't do it. Like, you can't. I feel like you can learn it to an extent, but a lot of it is just innate, right? But if you don't have a thick skin, if you can't. Like, I see some people who are new to social media, like my brother, he's just newer on Instagram, right? If he gets a negative comment, he'll try and argue back, and I say, you can't do that. It's not sustainable. Like, just don't worry about it. Like, that person is probably not having a great time. Don't worry about it. But you have to be that way. But it's hard to, you can't make someone think that way. If someone, you know what I mean? If you want to do something, it's hard for someone to tell you not to, because that's how you feel. So you can develop it a bit, but I do think for me, I've always been that way. I've always been a very confident person. And, like, I can take criticism. Like, I don't know. I don't really give a shit, basically. Do you know what I mean? I'm happy with what I'm doing. So if someone wants to criticise me, then fair enough. And if it's valuable or they're a person that I value, then I'll take it on board. But if it's someone who invariably is not even worth my time thinking about, then I'm just not going to think about it.
Yeah. And then I think the female pool's a whole different ballgame.
Yeah. I mean, it's just so bitchy, and I'm just like, oh.
But it goes both ways. I feel like even the positivity, I'm like, calm down, mate. Like, I look at some of the comments, and they're like, I fucking love you. You're like, what are you doing? It's a picture of you just stood outside in some leggings. How can you say I fucking love you?
It's intense.
Like, I'm like, Jesus, this is mad. Like,
I think that's quite an American thing. Yeah. I know it's a lot of my, like, American followers comment, I love you so much, sis. I'm like,
do you? Like, do you? You love me.
I love
me
it.
So,
and I really, it's just so different. Yeah. Like culture, I think that's quite different. It's yeah, intense. Girls can be such bitches online. Like, it's actually unbelievable. The worst ones I get, like the ones like the steroids, you look like a man, they come from guys. I'm like, oh, you've got a small dick.
Yeah.
But the ones that come from girls are like paragraphs, and they're trying to put meaning and emotion behind it. I'm like, you're actually just like not a very nice person.
But again, you've just got to feel, so someone that's written a paragraph in a comment on social media, think about their existence. Wow. It probably isn't very nice. I feel like you've just got to feel sorry for them. Like, going back to school, some of the kids I would teach, you always get one kid in the class and you're like, I'm a nice guy, but I literally hate this kid. Like, I hate you so much. But then you'd go and we had like a program, it's called like Sims, where you can go and you log on and you can see the person's backstory and like all the stuff they've gone through. And so I'd make an effort to go, if I had a kid that I didn't like, and I'd go and read all about their stuff, and you'd be like, fuck, they've had a horrible life. Their parents are horrible. They've done all these horrible things. Like, I remember there was a kid, right, who they found out that when they were like 2 and 3, their parents would take them to houses and send them through the cat flap to steal stuff. Like, imagine finding that out when as a kid. That's going to fuck you up, isn't it? So, I mean, it's pretty fair. You're probably going to be a horrible kid because you've had that. You've had to go through that. So
definitely.
I found that really helpful in terms of empathy. I'd be like, do you know what? I'll cut them some slack because they've had a shit life.
Yeah, I'm going to help them out.
It's the same thing. Someone writes that, they're probably having, probably got a bit of a shit life. So that's, don't worry about it. It's like more, like I said, it's more reflection on them than it is on you. You know?
Yeah, definitely.
I think some Oliver Twist shit are looking to send the kids in.
And then I had another kid when the kid got too big. Like, it's funny, but at the same time, you're like, fuck, going back to what I was saying about everyone having kids, they should not be allowed to have a kid.
Absolutely.
Do you know what I mean?
Not.
I think the people who sometimes don't deal with those comments well, and we saw it a lot over the past couple of years, is people who are overly anal about being PC, but being so fucking politically correct all the time, that they're getting themselves sort of entwined with this fucking sphere of just being nervous and scared to put stuff out because they're so scared of criticism to try and be too PC and just put you in this really shit place. I think the analogy we've used sometimes before is, and again, for people listening, if you've been subject to negative comments, a way to almost visualise it is to look at a football stadium. And if you looked at for how many hundreds of thousands of people comment, like, whatever your stuff, how many of those people would be cheering for you versus how many of those people would be booing you? Yeah. You wouldn't even be able to hear the boos because of that many people who are in your corner at the same time. Probably a lot of people who support you don't leave a comment or don't leave a like. It's just a negative people that fucking leave it there.
Like, that's so true. Like, you could have 1,000 comments. You would get 1,000 comments. You get one negative comment, and that's the one that will stick in your mind, obviously, because it's just, again, it's human nature. So, like you said, you've got to... Yeah, that's a great way to visualise it because it is literally insignificant. You're never, you could. I did a video where I did like, I gave like 100,000 calories, but I gave it was all to charity, so I gave a shit ton of food to charity.
Really good.
Still got like two, I think it was like 2 or 3 negative comments. Like,
trying to flex on it.
You literally can't please, like, it's just, that's life, isn't it? You could make a video where you're a fucking monk for 10 years and you just do amazing things, but someone will still criticise you because that is society. That's what people are like. So it's just knowing how to distinguish between what's valuable and what's not.
So, without giving too much away, what have you got coming up next?
Okay, so we've got the Morsia gyms opening soon, which is pretty exciting.
It's
literally mad.
Yeah,
as
it's
if,
really
mate,
exciting.
As if, mate, even a thing. The other day on the YouTube video.
Yeah. So we've got Guildford, Nottingham, and Loughborough. There's a few more possibly that are going to be happening. It's just I'm trying to negotiate because, like, the biggest thing on these is that they're sick gyms, and like, I'm not going to compromise on that. So if they're not going to be sick gyms, then they just won't happen. Yeah. But
you literally put your name on it, so
exactly, maybe some more of those, we'll see. I'm doing the drug thing, I can't go into too much, but that's going to be mad. That's going to be, it'll be the first time someone's ever done it that I know of on social media, and like I said, it will be, I've said it before, and like said it on my Instagram before, like, if you're accusing me of taking drugs, like, probably stop doing that, because I'm literally about to prove completely, you know, beyond any doubt, completely conclusively that I'm not, and that almost certainly that you can say that I'd never have been as well. So that'll be like, it's dragging on now, so it's getting a bit shit, but like, when it happens, I'm like buzzing for that to happen, because it will be like really cool content. It will be, I think it will be eye-opening, and hopefully it will kind of, it will make people think twice about just throwing out accusations. Do you know what I mean? Because like,
absolutely.
I think there are people, I mean, I know the people that are natural, that look better than me, that are stronger than me, but I feel like I'm a good level in terms of being a natural athlete, and so if people say, well, do you know what, Matt's natural, so hang on a minute, maybe I should reassess what I think is possible, because I think people have extremely low expectations, you know what I mean, or beliefs as far what you can do.
Oh my god, they do.
But more than beyond that, I'm doing a video in a couple of weeks, or when this comes out, probably quite soon after, it's going to be fucking horrendous, but you can just wait and see that. But yeah, that's going to be similar to what we did today, but just much, much worse. That'll be quite funny.
Ooh, interesting.
But yeah, I'm just going to do, you know, just continue doing stuff. Got a house, a mad house build that's going to be happening soon. I'm well excited for that. That'll be fun.
Well, are you going to do book number two or...?
No, I'm not an author. Like, do you know what? Yeah, like, so Penguin really want me to do another book, like, because obviously you might as well, right? Because it's a, like, if you're an author, that's what you do. But writing a book is a massive ball ache. Like, it was, do you know what? Like, I'm so happy I did it, and it's really cool, and like, it's mad. It was like a, for 2 weeks, yeah, it was a Sunday Times bestselling, like, I'm a Sunday Times bestselling author. Like, what the fuck? This is ridiculous, yeah, but I feel like I've done that now and I'm moving on. Do you know what I mean? Like, writing a book is not, it's like, it is cool, but it's a massive ball. Like, it's a lot of work. Like, lots of other things suffered while I was doing that. So there's no way I could justify doing another book. That's something I'd like to, I feel like I've just kind of, I've done it now and I'm like moving on. But yeah, no, I'm not. No,
do you feel like there might be another point, like, later in life though, where you could be like, do you know what? That could be a thing.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. It's just hard, like, what I didn't appreciate at the time is that obviously you write a book over quite a long period of time, and like, say it takes 6 months or whatever. Mm. When you, like, I'd then go back and I'd be like, that chapter one is shit, like, I want to rewrite it. And you could just do that indefinitely. Do you know what I mean? It's like decorating a house. Like, our house we're in now, we decorated 10 years ago. We were in one room at a time. By the time we finished, room one was like a year old. We were like, oh, maybe we could change it. Like, you could do it indefinitely. It's really hard to say, do you know what? I'm done now, I'm stopping. Like, even now, I read it, and there's some bits of the book that I want to change, but it's like, you've got to draw the line somewhere, because you could just do it forever. Yeah, do you know what I mean? So I found that really, really hard. I think it could be, yeah, maybe it would be cool. Maybe it'd be cool to do, like, some more in the future, but I'd need to have more time, because, like, I feel like it's, right now, I found it really hard to get the time to do that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, maybe, like, a few years down the line, maybe that could be something I could do, yeah. We'll see. Cool. Maybe, like, Colour by Numbers, maybe. Erotica, maybe, like, an erotica, like a Kama Sutra type thing. Like, didn't you guys do that? Didn't you do, like, a... Pretty sure he did.
We
Lucy and Ben, top 100 position, the sex positions.
Yeah, we met on Grand.
I know Cal was... told me he got the shots for that.
So. Yeah, he did.
Oh,
yeah.
He's got
he's got
7%
of the rights to it, so.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, my goodness. No.
Nice. You should look that up. That is actually, honestly, that's a thing. Let's Google it.
But where can people find you? I know you've got the same name across everything.
I'm not giving my address out.
But, no, not the address. Not your address or your mobile, because that would be going against your own privacy. But no, where can people find you? Instagram,
just
YouTube.
Like, just type in, like, Matt Does Fitness on any.
I think if you type in Matt on YouTube, the Does Fitness.
Matt, I think you've got to do
up.
Matt
anyway,
D, then it comes up.
Oh,
I'm
Matt
slowly
D.
working my
You're
way
working
down the letters.
You're working your way to the M. Yeah. And you type in an M, mm-hmm. Matt Does Fitness will come up.
And we'll put all links on the YouTube part anyway. If you listen to this one, you enjoy it, and you don't think we're all dicks, leave a review on
Apple. I think we're all
Apple.
Dicks. So, like, if you think one or two, then
these
that's fine.
Two.
Yeah.
Law of averages, you're not going to
be an angel.
Yeah. One of them's going to be a penis.
No, she's actually, she is. In real life, Lucy's a massive dick, by the way.
And if you watch it and then listen to a story, then tag me, Lucy, and Matt.
You're going to do it one more time. You're an absolute...
Oh, got 90.
No, you did
no,
it.
You didn't.
And it's got literally
in the podcast. But we'll catch you next one, guys.
Bye.
Woo-woo. See you later.